Welcome to How I See It with me, Mark Pratt, and
Justin Sternberg. This is a podcast that works to counter cultural polarization through thoughtful conversations. And culturally, you know, you're talking about people who, it's a personality worship, that whole idea. And I think probably all of us have, I mean, I know for sure you had a personality like that in your life. I certainly did. Mm-hmm. So, in fact, you know, listening to Mark Driscoll reminds me of him so much. And mm-hmm. I think the beauty of it is that God uses that stuff as well. And I think it's spun off this version of culture now where there is some disenfranchisement. That's not good. But there's also a desire and a seeking of authenticity, which is good, you know, and to where there's space for an album like yours. There's space for being real and not having this perfectly packaged CCM, you know, album. But reality is in the mix, and there's a longing for that, a desire for that. And I think authentic, and that's not just the Christian culture, right? Authenticity is more and more desired and appreciated. You know, you think about 50, 60 years ago where you wanted a professional to help you, someone who knew what they were doing, they could talk above you, so you trusted them. Okay, I trust you, you know what you're doing, you're smart. And now it's kind of the opposite, where trust comes when I know you're real. And that cultural shift has happened in, I want to say, the last 20 years or whatever.
Yeah.
And that obviously bled into the church. And chicken or egg, you know, the whole Mark Driscoll, that personality worship, which came first? Was that us doing it first? I kind of don't think so. I kind of think we were modeling the world, you know, and saying, oh, that works over there, let's do that here too. I don't know, but it could be the other way, and it doesn't matter.
In a lot of ways, the phenomenon that drives, I think, the phenomenon that drove Mars Hill and a million other people like Mark, and the phenomenon that drives vanilla positivity Christian songwriting, which we're all, you know, prone to fall into as writers, is the same. It's I don't know if this is too crass, but like, it's like the pornification of everything.
We want
the shortcut to the illusion of the thing without having to do or experience any of the awkward real parts of there.
Right.
You know, and so it's like, so someone like Mark Driscoll being a loud, opinionated caricature, which has parallels in other spaces in life, but nevertheless, having that kind of personality to live vicariously through means I don't have to. As long as I agree with his vicarious loudness, then I can sort of half do it, and it's like, no, but I'm with him and he's really doing it. Just look over there. And there's the same thing with music, where it's like, oh no, I'm for 4 minutes, 3.5 minutes, I'm victorious and peppy and I feel that. And it's not to discount that that can happen, that those songs really can be a moment for somebody that spins them into something. Of course that can happen. I'm not saying that can't. It's just, that can't be it. These moments need to be springboards that lead us to, I mean, the album is called The Work for a reason. I mean, these are springboards to doing the work of living faithful life. I mean, every song we ever write as a worship writer is part of liturgy. Even if we don't call it that, even if we don't recognize that, we should feel the weight of knowing we're competing with Cranmer. So like we're in there doing the real thing of helping people pray prayers. And if we don't feel that weight, then we're not paying attention. And the word liturgy is the work of the people. These songs are fuel for lived life. They are not a 4 minute distraction or a setup for a bad stand-up comic on a Sunday. That's not the vibe. We are doing discipleship in these songs. You know?
Yeah.
And I hope that we all recognize that. I certainly am trying to increasingly myself and feel weighed down in a sense by who do I think I am, you know, speaking of Mark Driscoll. But like that sense of like the work of living this thing and doing the long, slow, hard work of living it out is different from simply appreciating it for 4 minutes at a time. It's just not the same thing. Yeah. One leads to the other. It doesn't automatically mean it happens, you know? And I think that's just been such a, I can't even say I'm nailing it right now. I'm kind of in this space myself where with the chaos of moving country and everything else, where my personal discipline of prayer isn't what I would like it to be perfectly honest. It has been, of course, but it, you know, if I think of this last month, it's like my life is chaos right now.
Sure.
You know? And so much of, I think, I don't know if it's maturing or what or growing. It's like, you know what? It's not that I think God doesn't care. It's that I don't want to be motivated simply by guilt. There's a discipline difference between discipline and relationship, and like, this is the, you know. And so I'm kind of in this space of finding moments where I get them, and in trying to be with Jesus in a simple, you know, childhood sense, and I'm grateful for that, but at the same time, I also know, like, hey, life is hard sometimes and busy and crazy. And, you know, I think so much of what I need to be doing and need to be focusing on is living lovingly. And that means centering in who God is and also loving my neighbor well.
Yeah.
That's hard. That's work.
It's, agreed. Yeah. If you don't mind, there's a couple lyrics I want to talk about.
Or, sure, great.
Or phrases, I should say. The first one I want to talk about. So my favorite worship leader is my wife. She's taught me everything, and I just love her heart when it comes to worship. And, Mark, would you agree?
Yeah. She's awesome. Your favorite? Yes, I agree. She's your favorite in more ways than one.
pretty strange if he cut you. I was like, that's not true at all.
Anyway, there's a lot of things that we've talked about over the years, but one of the things she has talked about is how much she appreciates O's, ahs, you know, or even like manifesto, amen, right? Like those elongated opportunities to worship without having to have words, because there's something in it. And I think she would describe it like the Bible talks about the wordless groans, like the Holy Spirit will speak for us in ways that we can't understand. So in some ways it's this singing prayer of I don't know, but you know, kind of. I'd love to get your take on that.
It's I can get real geeky if you want.
Please do.
So, one of the fascinating things in the last 15 years with how much neuroscience has developed and evolved is we can see that group singing, so people singing out loud together, has a physiological effect that rivals practically every group activity except for sex. Wow. So like there is this, so when you sing in a group, you know, fundamentally basic human thing in most cultures. So when you sing in a group, your brain produces huge amounts of a hormone called oxytocin, which is sometimes called the love hormone. And it's the same hormone that a mother is flooded with when she breastfeeds for the first time, same hormone when your elbows touch at the movies on your first date. It's that bonding agent that kind of does the thing. So just the practice of singing on a material level does something in us as humans. And what's crazy is just a few years ago, University of Bonn in Germany showed that oxytocin, one of the byproducts of oxytocin, is altruism. So let's go back to Matthew 22 for a second. Love the Lord your God with your whole self, your body, all of these things. So dopamine and oxytocin, both produced by group singing. Your body's enthralled. You're bonded with the people around you. You're bonded with your community just in the act of group singing, right? And then apparently, you're also, at least in some way, fueled to love your neighbor as yourself.
Sure.
So that just in the act of group singing, a little bit of Matthew 22 is taking place.
Right.
No doubt.
Which is, I think, really crazy. Because I know the view is, a lot of people will, a lot of Christians will, you know, treat science as a toss away. I'm not one of them. I'm really into it. But the reality is, I think it's remarkable that God gave us brains and bodies to use. And Mm-hmm. And you know, again, to our point about being holistic as opposed to divided lives, it's like, it seems like God baked in some of these things that Christian tradition discovered and has done. And, and you know, Christianity has always been a singing faith for a reason.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
It's amazing. And this is just one example of, you know, hundreds of thousands I'm sure we've come up with over our over our collective existence as humans to see, oh, there was a reason for that, you know, and seeing science catch up. And Mark and I had an episode recently about creationism versus evolution, that whole thing, because again, very polarized, right? Mm-hmm. Even within Christian culture, there's polarized views between what creationism is, right? Mm-hmm. And but that was one of the themes, was just talking about science and how we don't have to be there's this tendency to be afraid of science if you, depending on what, you know, cultural
what
situation
you
grew up in.
What you were taught.
Like you said, we don't have to be afraid of it. Instead, it's exciting. It should be, because it's just going to show more and more of his plan and his creativity. And anyway, that's really cool.
And I think it's interesting because, I mean, realistically, all truth is God's truth, you know, what, depending on when we find it out. So, you know, the fact that we're singing together, or the fact that we're even singing, puts it in our brain in such a way that we don't have to memorize these long, you know, I think of Old Testament, you know, that memorization that could go along with song, that the minute I hear that song, it all comes to my mind. I don't have to recite it as a pledge. I think, you know, that connection is just fascinating, how God has baked in that ability. And, you know, there is a purpose in worship, whether we know all of those purposes yet or not.
Right.
But yet, even the little parts that we become aware of through science make, God, you did. Yeah. Hmm.
I think we're complicated people. We have emotions. We have all of these things. And I think the tendency in Christian faith, so like, no, emotion's bad, reason good. Well, we learn enough to know that's not simple either. And so it's like you kind of get in this, like, well, it turns out that there's something to be said for the whole person coming to bear in prayer. And that means, you know, emotions and all the rest of it. And so I think that there's really something beautiful in that. You know,
we
can say, oh, the whole music does things to the whole person in a unique way. And it makes an activity more than a solitary individualistic exercise. It makes it a shared communal experience. You know, you could talk about flow state. You could talk about the fact that groups aligns heartbeats. I mean, it goes on. It is the craziest. So science around group singing is the craziest stuff, I think, for thinking about what it means to, and why it's such a big part of what we do to get.
Sure.
You know?
So good. I feel like you're avoiding the old question.
No, I mean, I think I didn't get the answer. What? This is part of the thing. It's like there's something to simply the act of singing together that is beautiful and impactful. So the O's and A's and all of that are super helpful. Anyone can wrap their head around it and they can go there with you. I think it's a good thing. Now, sometimes what will happen is you'll get guys who kind of like, oh, well, all worship songs should be like the old hymns, which are pretty and theologically dense. And there is something to be said for content and quality. I do think that's good. But again, we're talking about human beings. We're not simply having people sing the dictionary or the phone book. Mm-hmm. It's like we're human beings, and there's a give and take. There's tension and release in that. And I think, so for me, I've tended towards verses which are punch, 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 and then choruses which allow people to breathe.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's like a good movie in my mind. There's tension and release. There's build and there's breathe in and breathe out, breathe in and breathe out. And I think so much of those moments, those O's and A's and you know, those kind of big soaring moments are really about that. It's like, okay, you've been chewing, now swallow. Let's move on.
Nice.
You know, that kind of thing.
Sure.
The other lyric I want to reference is "Holy is the Lord," because this is like, I don't know if you knew this, you probably did, but that's probably the most common phrase across all of your, you know, including City Harmonic. And I love it because, you know, Revelation talks about that's what the four living creatures, I wrote this down, each of them with six wings are full of eyes all around within, day and night, they never cease to say, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord God Almighty, who was and is to come." It's this idea that you can say this for infinity, and it's never enough. But right. Anyway, I wanted to get your take on that. Did you know that? I assume you did.
No, I mean it's all over the place. Yeah. I mean, from start to finish. I think one of the things that has stood out to me for a long time, and get real esoteric here if we want, but is like the idea that the word holy essentially means like, yes, set apart, but set apart as other. So there's sort of this like unlikeness. And so you have this really fascinating thing where the holy, the unlike, makes human beings and makes us in his image. So there's this kind of strange like but unlike thing happening. And so it kind of makes sense then that there's this theological idea called participation, which is common in Greek Orthodox circles. The Eastern Church has been into this forever. But it's the idea that like we as believers, and the question in theological circles has been, to what extent does Paul take for granted the theology of participation in his own soteriology and theology? So it's that kind of like participation being that the church, people participate in the church, and the church participates in the body of Christ. So that language is very consistent in, you know, throughout all of Paul. And so if you're looking at holy as the Lord, how does a holy God relate to his creation if we are both like and unlike God? And so it kind of forces us to come face to face with the idea of being made like God. Now, not in some crazy sense. I mean, that's the thing. We're called to be little Christs. That's the whole... So there is this tension in God is holy, therefore I am pulled into holiness self throughout the whole scope of my life, throughout every sphere of my life. It's again, not an exercise which occurs as a means of like, oh, wouldn't it be lovely if things were holy? It's a calling unto holiness. And even David sang is the song you're talking about. And it's a song that kind of marries the science of singing we were just talking about from this old, probably misattributed Augustine quote, for, you know, he that sings praise twice. But it is the idea that like there's something in singing that emboldens and bolsters the power of prayer in our own experience and our own lives. And I think that's true. And so like in that singing, there's something happening in our whole bodies. And from that comes this song that in the second verse of that song leads into every other domain of our lives, because it goes into Matthew 22. Holy is the Lord. So what does it mean to sing holy? Well, it means to be holy is the Lord. You know, in every domain of our lives. So that's really what that song's trying to get to very simply. It's sort of one of the few very congregational, very sort of meditative songs. It repeats itself. Which there isn't a lot of on this record, but that one, that song is one of them.
Yeah, it's a good one. I like that. I like that line too. I hadn't heard I didn't know it was Augustine or whatever, but just the idea that I was telling him.
He sings praise twice.
Yeah, he that sings praise twice so many times in worship. It's prayer, but it's like enhanced prayer essentially. So it's like 2x prayer essentially.
Absolutely. Well, you set a rhythm to it and you give people a cadence to follow, and the idea of praying together is a lot easier.
No doubt. How many times do you find yourself humming the prayer you said in your closet in the morning versus the prayer that you said with other people in the midst of a congregation? That's what continues in your mind.
That's good.
In the process.
It sticks.
Exactly. Yes. Unfortunately for some of us, it's the same five words that stick over and over and over again. But you know,
you sing those five words so well. It's very
Oh my gosh, that's great.
I'd love to. I'm glad you talked a little bit about City Harmonic. I wasn't sure how all that went down in terms of like the shift from that to solo.
It's totally. Totally healthy.
That's amazing.
We're still friends. We're planning a barbecue in a couple weeks.
Nice.
You know, there's nothing. Eric had cancer, and he fought cancer for 3 years. Came back after 2 years, and after a year of touring, realized he couldn't anymore. And the rest of us were like, "Well, let's keep trying," and sort of decided, you know what, we're a band's band, and we need to close the book. I mean, I often compare it. There's a very particular sitcom that takes place in a workplace where there was originally a British version and then there was an American version. The British version was what, 2 seasons, yeah. I think, maybe? Mm. And it was great.
Do you know what show he's talking about?
No, but that's okay.
Is it okay if we say it?
Yeah, well, I don't care.
I was just trying to figure it out while he gave more and more of the story. Right, going, so yeah, keep going.
You look at The Office.
Yes, The Office.
UK version of The Office was crass at times, yeah. But it knew exactly what it was doing. It was tightly packaged,
yeah.
And they ended when they needed to end. The American Office was 9 seasons,
mm-hmm.
of which 3 were great.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you know, 60% of what they did was kind of wasting everybody's time to keep going because they could, because yeah. it was making money. Mm-hmm. And I think of that as like a metaphor for creative projects. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, I could just do this because I could.
Yeah.
We could, the harmonic could have continued because it was practical to do so because it paid our bills.
Mm.
But we started as a band on mission. We were commissioned by 30 odd churches to go out and do what we did.
Wow.
And rather than just ride off into the sunset slowly while everyone got bored of us, we called it.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
Are you ever
something
tempted
to be said
to get,
for that?
Yeah. There's a lot to be said mm-hmm. for that. Yeah. Are you ever tempted to get together to just do something? I don't
well,
know.
Eric,
have a barbecue.
Still,
music, musically.
I don't think that the band as a whole will reunite musically. No, not for any, you know, particularly. Which I just don't. Everyone's moved on in their lives, I think. But Eric is still full-time in music. I'm still very focused on music. So it's a big part of our lives. Eric co-wrote the song Fire and Ice
cool.
on this record.
Okay.
So we did that. And so that's still part of, you know, we're still, I mean, I had lunch with him last week. So we're still very.
Yeah.
Is he in remission or is he?
He's on the other side of it.
Wonderful.
That's awesome.
But with complications,
mm-hmm.
of course, you know, that will probably, he has a liver disorder, for example, as a result of it, that'll probably never.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, never go away. So that's, there's stuff like that, but mm-hmm. no, I mean, he's on the other side of it and life is good.
Glad to
that's
hear.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously, Manifesto is a favorite, I think, probably of pretty much anyone who's heard of them, but heard of you guys. But Holy Wedding Day, man, that song punches me every time I hear it.
Mm.
Like, at the end, I don't know. It's such a great. We were talking about Holy is the Lord, right? And singing at that revelation end times, you know, when we get to all go up there, that song is very much painting a beautiful picture of that. And
yes,
yeah, it's such a great song. I'd love to hear your thoughts on it, like just whatever, you know, what
I think so one of the things that sort of started my theological exploration journey 20 years ago was first encountering N.T. Wright, the theologian out of the UK who I'm a huge fan of. And he talks a lot about how we often reduce Christianity to going to heaven when we die, as opposed to this marriage of heaven and earth and Jesus and the bride, which is what we see in Revelation. And so in I think it's Revelation chapter 3 or 4, but the picture that is painted of the angel singing Holy, Holy, we often read that as like only future tense. It's like, oh, this is what it will be like. Whereas that section of Revelation is actually saying, this is what it is already and always like.
Yeah.
And then there are other sections of Revelation, of course, 21, for example, that are pointing to new heavens and new earth and this reality of creation redeemed and lives redeemed and the cities redeemed and this kind of city of God being the new lived reality centered in and around Jesus. And so that song is a really thick metaphor. So there's sort of this like, there's the church and there's the bride and the groom, of course, the church and Jesus, which I thought the idea of the church as the bride of Christ was really universal. Like, I thought everybody knew that.
Yeah.
At least youth pastors and pastors.
Yeah.
And then we played an event and a youth pastor, we went into a Wendy's to grab a snack after a show. And the youth pastor called us aside in front of their whole youth group and was like, hey, who's the bride? And they were totally serious. I was like, oh, I thought this was like a thing, you know, that everyone knew.
Yeah.
So anyway, the bride refers to the church,
yeah.
and it's that same thing of kind of this is the story of the Son of God dying on earth. It's sort of this contrasting between you have heard it said, but I think it's more like this.
Sure.
That's a big part of what that song is doing. Again, wrapping around worship. We don't worship to escape. We worship because God is doing something amazing in our midst. Mm-hmm.
Right now.
Right now.
Not for the future, but including the future.
Which is exactly. Which is his, I mean, the kingdom is a big part of your music in the new album. Like his kingdom is is something we talk about a lot too. His kingdom is not then later heaven. His kingdom is now. Mm-hmm. It's full form, right? Like you said, the new city of Jerusalem. Like when that whole thing happens, there will be no denying his kingdom.
Right.
But his kingdom never stopped. Like
right.
And yeah. We're
it's
in
what,
it.
The language of the now, but not yet. Right. Yeah. It's like we that and that's I guess like not to beat a dead horse at this point, but like I think that's the reality of what we've talked about this whole time. It's like the reality is you can't go beyond the surface of Christian thinking and not end up with retention really quick.
Sure.
Because certain fundamental things within Christianity are like the now but not yet. We live as if knowing it isn't and it is.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And that's like the basic Christian instruction. How does that make sense? Well, it kind of does and kind of doesn't. Like you're living into a realized future in the person of Jesus and in the mission and story and work of God in the world. And that is not a simple thing.
Right,
it's a beautiful thing.
Right.
It is a robust thing. It's a song we all want to hear. But if you try to break it down to ABCs, you're going to struggle.
Sure.
That's the thing about so much theology, right? Is it is meat that can only be chewed once, having matured in your faith long enough to actually have experienced the truth of that theology, and then be able to look at it and go, oh, it's that. Oh, you know.
Totally. Yeah.
And it's that love in action. You know, yes. we can become paralyzed, if you will, to a certain degree by that tension.
Right.
So therefore, what do I do? Well, in love, I will continue to move, and in God's grace, you know, he's going to overcome my failures because of who he is. But yet, as I continue to strive, as I'm drawn towards him, you know, in that growth, I am exhibiting my love for him and his love for me and love for others around, you know.
Exactly. I honestly don't, and I wrestle with this, and that's part of the lament of this record, I guess, is I don't know how you can spend a lifetime or a decade in scripture, in theology, reading authors old and new in the church, and not come away as you get older and older in life of going, I need to be more kind than I was yesterday.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Sure.
I don't know how, and yet we have obvious examples of people doing that, maybe. What did C.S. Lewis say? He was talking about artists and poets, but I think it's true of preachers a lot these days. People who fall out of love with the thing and only in love with their telling of it.
Sure.
And I think there's in theology and in art, there's absolutely that's a temptation for all of us who feel a creative impetus. It's like, oh, it's my role to say it, so I have to come up with some new way of saying it, otherwise I'm plagiarizing or whatever else. It's like, you know, at the end of the day, I don't know how you can spend so much time in this.
Yeah.
Jesus, and not come away going, there are fewer hills to die on. There are some hills.
Sure.
But there are fewer hills to die on than there were when I was 19.
Yeah.
And the result of that is that I ought to be kinder through the midst of people working it out, and kinder to people who are getting it wrong, and kinder to people. I mean, Paul outright says, "Who are we to judge the world?" Mm-hmm. And we have enough to work on in the church.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So it's like, I think we've often got the playbook backwards, where we're like, we have the answers, we're going to hit you over the head with them, and we're going to put all of the energy of the church into judging the world.
Mm.
And I just look at this, I think, Paul, first of all, Paul tells us outright, don't do that. So there's that. But then on top of it all, it's like, I don't know how you can spend more time in this and not lead with love and kindness and mercy. I don't see it.
Just beautiful. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
No doubt.
There's something to age.
There is.
Right?
No doubt.
Yeah. There's some things you cannot gain any other way, but just live another day and then another year and then, you know.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. TikTok. Tell me about TikTok. First of all, I love your videos. That was that's what got my brain ticking about. We need to get him on here because I loved your thoughts on worship.
Yeah, we actually that was my first introduction to you. Right. By all means, I just said, "Hey, check this out." Because we were talking about worship. We did a podcast on worship and what it means, you know. And yeah, so that was my first introduction to you was on TikTok, and it was
that might have been your first introduction to TikTok.
quite possibly yes, short of a pop-up here or there or something, you know, that kind of thing. But
I of course, I think I mentioned earlier I've owned a marketing agency forever and ever, so that's a big part of my life. So social media I'm very aware of and kind of trying to keep and approach it in a healthy way as best I can. I could probably go on TikTok and Instagram and just play guitar a bunch of times, and I do a little bit of that. But I think I also realized in a lot of ways, so much of the conversation around worship is centered around commercial interest. In other words, like the conferences are organized by people who own the publishing companies who write the songs, and I'm not shooting this down. I've benefited from this, so I can't, like, you know, bite the hand that feeds me, so to speak. But it's sort of because of how people are tends to kind of collect around like four church groups and some association with those four church groups. And I think one of the beauties of TikTok in particular and Instagram Reels, in as much as they copied TikTok, is that it is remarkably good at building communities out of interest.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than just building communities out of existing communities. So Facebook and TikTok are opposites. Facebook was, here's your group, now you can be your group here.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, there'd be cross-pollination. You'd maybe join a Facebook group or something like that. But Facebook was never designed to grow and create communities. Facebook algorithmically was designed to monetize communities. TikTok is the opposite. TikTok actively takes creator input and finds other people who like that input. And so a big part of what I've been trying to do is, like, I talk about worship a lot because I'm like, hey, look, I know I'm a weird cat in our space. I'm really into science. I'm really into behavioral economics and sociology. And I'm, you know, really into theology. I'm just kind of an overthinking geek. And so, like, when it comes to my approach to worship, I do sometimes end up taking a position that surprises people who've been in this a lot, because I'm kind of like, well, I know that we heard that before, but A, it's not in the Bible, and B, science doesn't back it up. So how are we going to talk about this? Like, there's, you know, and I kind of try to, and I don't, not to dismiss anybody. Most of the people doing worship stuff are my friends. I mean, I go around, I talk to them, hang out, we have coffee. That's my life. So, but I come at it from an angle of somebody who this entire time has had my foot in the world. I've been running a company for 15 years that's, you know, selling, helping someone figure out how to find other toffee lovers. I mean, that's a part of what I've been doing this whole time. And I think when you approach ministry and faith and that sort of thing with that, you end up with a different perspective.
No doubt.
And so, like, in TikTok, I think I've been bringing that to the table, and I've had some unique experiences, I guess, that I've given me a slightly different take on some things, and I'm really loving and encouraged by the response. I mean, it really has been a really fast-growing community for me.
I love it. I've been sharing it with all kinds of people, so it's probably just you're welcome.
It's just you.
You thought it was TikTok's algorithms.
Yeah, there you go.
It's just you.
Yeah. I want to start wrapping it up. I just have one last thing. Get your take on performance versus worship, which we talked a lot about this, and so you might not have to say that much. And this isn't really related, but I'm going to try and make it related. But the idea of song burnout, and I know you have dealt with this more than I, because you go on tour and you play the same song in the same, you know, way every single night. I guess I'm just curious how you deal with song burnout. like what your thoughts are on that. And then how you separate performance from worship, and is performance okay? Like, and that's,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I hit the play button on my keyboard and awesome. Started playing and your song. So
I'm going to two-part it. Okay. First of all, the performance and worship thing. Because I think one informs the other.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yes, performance is okay. I don't know how you, as a human being, approach an activity you have done before and not learn from what you did last time. So on some level, you will inevitably perform when you lead worship. Inevitably. It is not going to not happen. What's fascinating is that the word itself, performo in Latin, is church Latin. It's compound Latin. And it means to form thoroughly. So when you're working as a builder, you get better at nailing the nail with the hammer. When you start out, you hit your thumb, you do... The thing is, it's completely authentic to hit your thumb with a hammer.
Sure.
So if it's just about authenticity in the moment as opposed to authenticity in the lived life, then performance is the devil. But if authenticity is more than that three-minute window where you're singing that song, but it's instead who you are becoming, who you have been, who you are when you leave, who you are when you turn around. If that's what authenticity is, right? It's more about living in concordance, with your values and your desired character or your desired persona, if you will.
Integrity.
If that's what authenticity is, then performance is a non-issue.
Sure.
Because on some level, the beef between worship and performance, so to speak, is actually a beef about momentary authenticity and personality consistency.
Sure.
But the problem is that you go to work and you have a different working relationship with your peers than you do with your kids. And that's good, healthy, and important. Which one of those is the real you? So I think we have this strange cultural hang-up around authenticity that has more to do with how we've come to understand the word as a subtext rather than what it can has the potential to mean in our lives, which is that we are true to our true north.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah. Yes. It's interesting you bring that up, though, because even when we are in that true north, we become more like what we call isomorphic process, to where our relationships become the same and there isn't that incongruity.
That is born of habit, isn't it? It's born more of habit than simple choice.
Sure.
It's not as simple as saying, I'm going to now, and then I do. We all know, you guys working with CR, you know full well that is not how it works. Desire matters, but desire alone does not answer the question.
Sure.
Habit matters. And so, to that end, one of the best pieces of advice I ever heard on performance was in an article, an interview with a classic female singer, I think from the 50s and 60s kind of thing, and they were saying the same question, how do you show up every day and sing the song like it matters, right? And I think, in my mind, there's two things that play out. One, the worship leader and the congregant have utterly different lives. They are not. You are not showing up on Sunday as a mom of five and ready to go, step one. So worship leaders lead with their banger all the time. It's a huge mistake. The first two songs, all you're doing at best is getting everybody comfortable. That's it. If you expect more than that in the first two songs, good luck to you, sir. But it's those first two songs are trying to get mom to stop feeling guilty for swatting the kid on the butt to get out the door. Like that's you know, just human life, right?
Sure.
And so on some level, that what the singer was talking about was like so much of what needs to happen is in the moment taking on the emotion of the song by making it real to you. So maybe if there's some emotional quality, the song is sad or bittersweet, you think about a moment in your life where that was true in your life, and that emotion is what you bring forward. So it's not an inauthentic pretending, which is what bad performance is.
Sure.
It's an authentic becoming, which allows us to connect at a very human, healthy, spiritual level. So when it comes to song burnout, the exact same thing is true. There's a point where it's about the song, where the performance is about the performance. The performance is about my expression. That's fine. It's not to say that that's always evil. I think that can be really rewarding and encouraging at times. But if that eventually gives way to the moment being about the shared moment, or the moment being about the guy at the back of the room, and somewhere in the first year, maybe 2010, Manifesto became about the guy at the back of the room for me.
Sure.
That guy is always there. There's never a time where we play Manifesto where that guy isn't there. There's never a time where the guy in the middle of the room isn't like, oh yeah, and they come alive. Mm-hmm. And I'll play that song until I die with no shame, because it's not I do not care about the song anymore. Mm-hmm. I do not care. It is 100% about the moment that we have together and all that that does in us and through us for when we leave. And I'm shameless about it. I don't care. I don't want to over-spiritualize song selection. It can matter at times. It can be a big thing. I think we sometimes make too much of this in terms of like, God is telling me this song needs to happen. Maybe. I mean, you know, most Christians prayed the same liturgy for like 1,000 years. So unless we just thought that the church forgot how to be Christian, you know, forgot everything it ever learned, even in the Reformation. In reality, at some point, like, there's something to consistency. There's something to repetition. There's something to knowing that the goal is a beautiful life, and that those beautiful moments, fuel a beautiful life lived in Jesus. And so performance and songs and songs are prayers. I mean, you know what, the Orthodox Church has been praying the Jesus prayer over and over and over every day forever. So, you know, I think on some level I can be okay. You know, there's some, have you guys heard of James K.A. Smith? He's an author. He wrote a book called Desiring the Kingdom and Imagining the Kingdom. And the pop version of that is called You Are What You Love. It's talking about how human beings are not fundamentally thinkers, but are fundamentally lovers. Right? And how all of these little routines that we do shape what we love. They shape what we're pointed towards. They shape how we're going to do it. And he talks a little bit about habit in that. In that, like, if the only time brushing your teeth worked was when you were focused on brushing your teeth.
That's good.
Right?
Yeah. Right.
It doesn't. Sometimes you brush your teeth because you just need to have clean teeth.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know? Yeah. And so I think sometimes in our obsession with momentary authenticity, we sort of act as if, and there is something to be said too for showing up and being present to the activity. That's important. But it's not as simple as saying like, oh no, you should be riddled with guilt if you're singing the song this time and you're worried about the argument you just had. I mean, I think there's something to, on tour this would happen all the time. My kids would be going to bed, maybe my wife and I, you know, maybe every couple of months we get on the phone because I've been away a lot, and we're a little snippy at each other or something right before I'm supposed to take the stage. Right. So if momentary authenticity was the thing I was supposed to be concerned about, the entire show would be railroaded and I'd be treating the room as my personal therapist. I am not in the headspace having, you know, us having had a little bickering snit 5 minutes earlier. I'm not in the headspace to, but that's just selfishness.
Yeah.
And so stepping into the role for a moment to love and serve the room and put things in their right place and sort out this other thing in my life in its right context in a healthy way. I think that's just healthy emotion. That's just emotional health on some level, you know? And so I think, you know, a little bit of compartmentalization is normal and healthy. And every therapist I've ever been to has said that too. Like, there is a little bit of that that is normal and good. And so I feel like we have a few of these hangups as worship leaders. The average person going to work doesn't have.
Yeah.
And they're not like going to work and going, well, I can't show up for work today because of this thing that happened. I can't. Nope. Sorry. I had this fight with my kid. And so I'm calling in sick for the next 14 days. Like, most people don't have that option.
Yeah.
So sometimes I wonder, why do we think we do? Mm-hmm. You know?
No doubt.
That's good. Your Megan will be happy to hear your answer and put me in my place. So no, I've known all this stuff to be true. It's just I struggle with song burnout. I struggle with caring, I really care about the new songs, and I'm into it and I'm passionate about it. and then I'm done with it. And
yeah, well, I think for me, songs aren't the thing.
Right, and that's what I have to learn. And that's what she's got down. She's everything you said, she said in one way or another. That's why, sorry, she's my favorite over you.
That's great.
Just kidding. But yeah, I think that's always been my struggle is like, well, the emotional intelligence, right? It's that idea of this isn't about me, and I still haven't figured that out. And I try. I try.
I mean, I don't want to pretend like I'm some expert at this. I'm in the same boat. I think there's a live performance coach named Tom Jackson years ago who sort of pointed out, even in concerts, even if you're not talking about, just talking about the strict technicality of music and doing music well, right? That nobody remembers your song. They remember the moment you made of the song. And the part of the reason, I say this as a guy in it, nobody shoot me. Part of the reason that worship leaders are so obsessed with songs is because that was the only way companies could monetize worship. It is the publishing engine that drives us to be concerned with songs. Because that's the only part of it that can be sold.
Yeah.
And so like, and I sell things for a living. I'm not trying to be cynical about it. I'm saying it's not like there's no role in that. But we need to see it for what it is in order to do it healthily.
Sure.
And so I think there's really something to like, hey, you know what? The song is a means to an end. And that end is a moment of shared prayer that forms us in the long run. And probably repetition plays a way bigger role than we are wanting to admit in what that is.
No doubt.
That's good. Thank you. Thank you for the hand slap.
No, I did not need it that way. No.
Hey, if you need it, you need it, though. Come on now. It's okay.
I'm just messing.
No.
Well, we don't want to keep you all day. Well, I would keep you all day, but I know Mark doesn't want to keep you all day, and you don't want to be kept all day. Yeah. So
this is great. This is a lot of fun.
Yeah, this is.
Well, know that we appreciate your time and your wisdom. Thank you so much. Right. And like you say, I hope I didn't offend you in that process of steeping. I'm just recognizing that I'm not as musically inclined, but yet I desire to live a life of worship either way. Yes. And so that's that's where it comes from. I should have probably said it more from a musical standpoint, but
No. I think it's spot on. I'm not offended in the slightest.
Well, know that we appreciate the time you have given us. It's been a pleasure.
And sharing how you see it, cuz it's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great
thing. Well, thank you, guys. Appreciate you both. This has been tons of fun.
Well, we're glad to have had you on the podcast.
All right.
So Justin will definitely send you a link when we release so you can listen to what you share.
Hey, thank you for listening to our podcast. If you like How I See It, please do all the things that podcasts tell you to do. Subscribe, rate, review, follow us, and or talk nicely about us on social media. If you want to reach out, the email is us@howiseeit.click. Yep, I said .click, as in .click. Please tell your friends about this show, and we'll see you on the next one.